You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the El Arpa Podcast. Welcome to this latest El Arpa Podcast. Joining me, of course, is the wonderful, extraordinary, superb, fantastic Maria. How are you?
I'm very well now.
Okay, you're very well. Any news? Anything up? How has your week been?
It's been good. I think the books that we talked about last week are on the way.
Can you give us some more detail about said books?
There are 10 books, so it's quite a big set, so a quite large set, so I'm really happy about that. And they're all about poetry from like Civil War until present day.
Involving books from luminaries such as Miguel Hernandez, and who else?
Well, there's Luis Rosales, Blas de Otero.
And the Rosales book comes with a CD.
It does, and I'm very curious to see what it has, so maybe it's got some exciting songs.
Okay, well, we shall wait with fevered anticipation for the delivery of said books. Okay, so moving from one cultural scene to another, we will be talking about a photography exhibition that we've seen today involving a woman who knew how to get a fair price for her products and had no little modesty for said products as well. And this woman is called?
Julia Cameron.
Exactly. She was one of the first women to take photographs seriously as an artistic pursuit. And after this break, we're going to come back, talk a little bit about it, the pluses and minuses of the exhibition, and you'll hear all of that in just a moment. Welcome back to part two. Okay, so we tottled along to this exhibition today, which was in the MAPFRE Center right here in Madrid, next to Plaza de Colón, and between Alonso Martinez as well. We arrived, and much to our shock, we had to pay €6 to enter. An event that had previously been free has been monetized, hasn't it? We have to pay to get in there now, so it's a scandal, a disgrace. Yeah. How do you feel?
I feel outraged.
But did we pay the money in the end?
We did, yes.
Not outraged enough to not go in there. But no. Was it worth it after spending a couple of hours there?
Well, I think it was worth it. I mean, it's always, well, almost always worth to go and watch some art. At least, you know, to be able to say you don't like it. So.
Which we will be doing over the course of this, yes, of this part,
we
too.
Might. What's new?
Well, we are hard to please, yet we've done nothing to justify our cynicism.
No.
So that's such is the way, such is the world. Nevertheless, there are good points and bad points. Generally, there are photographs, as we mentioned, from the 1800s, the late 1800s, the 1870s, 1880s, and moving up to later years as well. There's a huge body of work in the exhibition, a lot of photographs. Let's start with the positive things. So what caught your attention?
Okay, so I think the best thing about it were the portraits. I think the portraits were quite nice. The ones that weren't staged were the best ones, I think.
Yeah, I think for us especially, staged photographs are a problem because it seems like it's a misuse of the medium, because photographs are about capturing the moment that happens in real life, and something that's staged might as well be a painting, really. The medium doesn't seem to be designed for staged events. And going back to the Latin Fire exhibition that we saw in another venue in Madrid. There's other photographs that were similarly staged, and they left a bad taste in our mouths as well, didn't they? So that was a misstep in our opinion about the photographs. But the portraits caught your attention. You liked them. What was their power? What was their intrigue or the positive thing that?
Well, I think her main characteristic is that she took photographs. In reality, she didn't know how to take photographs very well, so that resulted in some mistakes that she tried to use to give some, I don't know, a different look to her pictures. For example, if they were blurry, rather than repeating it, she would just be quite happy with that because she thought it gave it, you know, some
honesty,
sort of mystery.
Well, obviously, a lot of people weren't ready for that at that time. They felt it was appalling that she was using these techniques intentionally. It's surprising though, because at the end of the exhibition you can see the photos that she rejected, her B-roll or her deleted scenes from the photographic series. So, you know, so it's very interesting to see the photos that made the cut being as flawed as they were from a technical standpoint, and those that didn't, you know, because in some cases the photos there wasn't that much to differentiate.
I was gonna say, do you think they were very different?
No, they looked scratchy and dirty and out of focus, like the ones that were in the main exhibition.
Exactly.
But I imagine it's just because of, you know, images repeating themselves, and she probably had enough of a certain type of image that she was looking for, and then she rejected the others because she
perhaps,
felt thematically it was done. Okay, and yes, the portraits were fantastic, because especially some of them were like photographs from the 60s, the 1960s or the 70s, or they looked so recent, and the people in them looked so human, which is might seem like a strange thing to say, but a lot of the photographs from that time were of stiff portraits, because that was the fashion of the time. Nobody smiled and nobody stood in a very animated way. So very anti-Cristiano Ronaldo in a classical photo, basically.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, he was quite stiff in that as well. He was posing quite a lot as well, so maybe not so different. But they looked relatable and human, and you could see fine details such as the folds of the hands, the veins on the hands as well, and those little things that make us human and are unique to us. You know, our hand patterns and the lines all over our body and our faces, they're specific to us. And going back to what you said about the blemishes in the photographs, intentional or not, I think it's like quite a beautiful thing, really, because the people she photographed in this part of her photographic career were ordinary people, or people that she knew, housekeepers or whatever, and children. And, you know, they're ordinary people with blemishes and scratches, and just like the photographs as well. So it's a very democratic thing, you know. She doesn't know about photographs, but she's still taking them, and that's fantastic, because everybody should express themselves, and everybody has the right to be part of this artistic movement as a subject.
I'm very impressed with how you're turning your thoughts into a very positive spin.
Well, no, I mean, the portraits were good. It was just the rest of it that, you know, I'm gunning for that. So the second part is going to get it.
We should have enjoyed it while it lasted.
So it was very short-lived, because it was the smallest collection within the general collection. The next, do you remember what the second collection was called? Because it was something really pretentious and stupid. Like the photographic thing of delightful things, or
something.
The pictorial
fantasy.
Fancy.
Something like that.
Pictorial exhibition of fancy and whimsy.
Of fanciness and delight.
And
something like that.
Something that just turned the stomach to read it. But okay, so let's do this. Gloves are off. Let's annihilate this mother. So you're the meanest of us. So you start.
By popular vote. Okay, well, it just had a lot of staged images. A lot of them were serving kind of like a religious purpose, obviously, religious society.
Well, she was a strong Christian.
Yeah.
Basically, they're Madonna and Child scenes, which, I mean, if you look at the whole history of religious art, all these symbols are repeated endlessly. I have very conflicted feelings about this portion of the exhibition, because, yes, particularly those Madonna and Child scenes, I did find very, very dull, because they're not interesting in the whole history of Christian art, for one thing. But second of all, I don't believe photographs should have been used for that, because it's this new cutting edge medium that's transforming things, you know. And what we see in the first part of the exhibition for us, we're seeing people that we never have the chance to meet because they're in the past, they're gone, that life has disappeared, and we can learn something from it. And what we saw in other parts of the exhibition, because the final part were photographs from people who from other people, and we could see the difference in their subject matter, which was quite distinct from the subject of the exhibition. So of people, of ordinary people, of buildings, of faraway places such as Taj Mahal. And again, if you're the viewer, you can really learn about this new culture that you don't have access to. You're not going to go there with a Ryanair flight, for example. So these things are more interesting and have more value, I think. These photographs, you know, they're either Madonna pictures, or they're celebrating this English idyll of a rural paradise that may or may not have existed. And again, that's fine in poetry. It's fine maybe in paintings as well. But photographs are for the now and for the future, you know, not for celebrating something that's probably a fantasy, for one thing. But going back to the hands of the people in the first part of the exhibition that we could recognize, and their individual characteristics, you know, you can't see that in those stage photographs, because the robes and garments and the static nature of their poses and their inferences are blocking everything that's remotely human in these photographs, you know. So it's just pointless, you know. I mean, I don't care about these people in these settings, really, because they're not themselves.
Artificial.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was very disappointing from that respect.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of like frivolous entertainment, really, within of like upper class society, you know, the Victorian era, and it's just more of a, you know, an entertainment of let's just do different poses and. Pass the time creating compositions, you know.
Because there's a scene from Dante's Inferno as well, and I don't know, I mean, you have these intellectuals or the rich people from the past who, I think, co-opt ancient culture, ancient Italian and Greek culture, because they believe that they are the descendants of that moneyed elite or that influential class of people destined to run the country. And it's a little bit ugly, that sentiment, I believe, because it's a bit us and them, you know. We are the chosen people, we are the followers from these great people, and the rest are there to serve us. But again, as well, in these photographs, you don't get the sense that there's maybe an understanding of Dante's Inferno or the source material.
It's more like borrowed images.
And, you know, Dante's Inferno is a book that sings through its descriptions, and it deserves a better pictorial representation than the photograph that we saw in this particular exhibition. But the reason I'm conflicted, though, is because, you know, she was tapping into something that was there as well, that was happening across Europe, this general nationalist feeling. And part of that nationalist feeling was celebrating the countryside, because the countryside was purity, and it was the country as a whole at its most innocent and at its most pure as well. So people like Tennyson, who wrote poems and kind of long pieces celebrating nature and how we should go back to nature, saying those kind of things. She collaborated quite frequently with those people. So, you know, even though we don't like those photographs, she is tapping into something that was kind of a general social movement across England, United Kingdom, and Europe as well. So we can't criticize her too much, because she was swept up in something that was, to be fair, a social movement, like I said. But I suppose what really we have to look at is whether the art stands the test of time. So Tennyson is a poet that we would still read, but her photographs, okay, we're still looking at them because they're in the exhibition hall here, they're in the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, but they're not as famous as Tennyson, and they never will be, because the art doesn't hold up. So even though the sentiments have changed and have become old-fashioned, that drove the art. If the art was good enough in itself, it could withstand the test of time. But her photographs haven't done that, because they're flawed to begin with. And not because of the blemishes, but because of the motivation behind it.
Yeah. I can only say I agree.
Yeah.
But it's funny you should say that, because in the exhibition, it has a few quotes from like letters that she sends to people and to her patron. and other sponsors saying that you know, she's very pleased with her results, and this one where she says there will never be better photos, and you know, it's quite striking that the comment that that we come up with after watching them is that, you know, they haven't endured as they could have done.
Yeah, I don't really know why she felt like that. I mean, maybe she felt very, very unique, because a lot of the art at that time, because we saw an exhibition recently of Italian art from that time, and I was in the Romantic Museum a couple of weeks ago, and there was English art from that time period as well. And like the photographs from people of her generation that we saw at the end of the exhibition, they focused, as I said as well before, on ordinary people, on ordinary sculptures and buildings, and you could get a real sense of the ordinary life that ordinary people were living. And that seemed to be the greater general trend for art in the different aspects of art, from paintings to photographs, and I'm sure to literature as well. And she seems a little bit out of step with that, which is kind of ironic as well, because her medium, as I said at the start of the show as well, is photography, which was the new trend, something that would take art forward in a new direction because it was a modern invention.
I think her photographs do a very good job at showing, you know, how kind of like closet the upper class you know, society was at the time. Because basically what it's showing us is the limited view that she has of the world and the limited actors within the scope of her world. So I think it's kind of like an inverse way of looking at it. we sort of see what she doesn't see.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Yeah, she reveals more about herself than anything else, which... which is something in itself, which has artistic merit as well, because we're learning about...
Yeah, it has a value.
Yeah, we're learning about human nature in its, its blemishes as well, which is appropriate in the context of her style of photography as well. Is there anything else that you want to talk about regarding this?
Well, I think we've sort of trashed it enough for now.
That is true. We have trashed it quite a lot.
Yeah,
okay, well, so from me, Mary, and John, the priest... Bishop Baptist, we'll be joining you momentarily. Welcome back to the show. Quick question. Have you ever met anybody who writes for Marca?
I have indeed. It might be Javo Velarpa, and it's not me.
You mean me?
Yay!
Oh, you do write for Marca. There is no point to this story. I just wanted to say it. okay, so, well, that's pretty much it. So thank you for tuning into this latest episode of the Alarpa podcast. You can find us on the Alarpa Opinion podcast feed, through our Facebook website and Twitter feed, of course, and also various podcast apps that you can find on the old internet, on the old Android market, so you have no excuse to avoid listening to us. So this is Enda from the Alarpa podcast saying goodbye.
And Maria saying bye.
You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the Alarpa podcast.